the MMA Roadshow, episode number 404. My name is John Morgan, and Cole Coffee is with me for this special holiday edition of the MMA Roadshow.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle motherfucking all the way. It is to drink with Morgan during the day.
That works! That was good! He brought the lyrics on the fly. Frosty beverages are in full effect on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. Didn't have the old go-to, by the way. I guess I didn't notice over here at the Casa de Cold Coffee, man. The palatial estate over here has made some significant upgrades in the beverage department. Your new beverage director has really done some things.
But they got to keep up on the old favorite.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I'm a little disappointed. Again, all respect to the beverage director, but please let him know. I would have liked to have an award-winning Pabst Blue Ribbon this afternoon, and he did not have those in stock. But instead, I just reached in and grabbed the first thing I saw. There was just stock full of craft beverages in there. And I ended up with it's a wild one here, but it's kind of interesting. It's a Cranbert.
Yes.
It's based on the Cubert, if you'll all remember the old Cubert game back in the day. The artwork on the can is, kind of looking like that. I probably shouldn't describe it too much because there might be some copyright infringement going on here. That maybe the Red Leg Brewing Company did not exactly clear with the makers.
The color schemes are maybe off a little bit.
A little bit, but it is a wheat ale with cranberry.
Yes,
I figured that a little cranberry sauce for the holidays or what have you.
So good. Mm-hmm. I went with one. It's from the Knee Deep Brewing, and it's called Final Lap, and it's an Italian style pilsner, so it's real light. What these are is the place up by the airport, the Lazy Dog Beer Company, mm-hmm. which is a really, really cool spot. You could actually take your dog.
You can bring your dogs,
and chill out on the patio and everything. They have a beer club there, and on this particular one, every quarter they do a different sort of a limited brew of different ones. And this particular one, I think, was done in conjunction with either this one or the one last one was with conjunction of different colleges. I think this one might have just been with different breweries. So they usually do a collaboration of different breweries. And the theme on this one was sort of arcade.
I was going to say, that's a video game.
And this looks like a video game.
What do they call it? Final Run or something like that? Or
something like that, where it was like you were in the Corvette racing or whatever. Yeah, it's that sort of deal. So, yeah, it's fun. I mean, and then you usually get that, and then you get like a that's right. This was the Hophead Supercade. Or unless this is just one of the brands, but this is release number 16. I want to say this was the Supercade,
nice little custom like an glass
arcade.
With it.
Yeah, and they comes with a glass, and it comes with eight of their the different brews. It's usually two of each one, so they have four breweries, and one of the ones in here, I'd have to look. I think it's still in there. Is actually from the brewery that's down in Fremont. Shoot, the name is escaping me right now, but I forget what the name of the brewery is. But one of the Vegas breweries is actually in this release as well.
Like to feature the local.
Yeah, but I do need to get on the beverage director. There's no excuse to not have some of the award-winning Pabst Blue Ribbon in here. I mean, it's just all more pointing to that Pabst should finally just get off their butts and start sponsoring us. It'd be nice if they just dropped off one of those 96 packs that we always see.
At some point, we really do need to make sure that we have one of those on hand.
Every year, somebody finds that picture and sends it to us. Hey guys, have you seen this? It's like, yes, every year. And every year I'm like, I want one. That's all I want for Christmas.
100%.
That's all I want for Christmas is one of those.
100%. Well, it's nice. We get to do a little day drinking this afternoon. You don't really have too many frosty beverages during the day, but
no.
There's no event this week. I mean, this is a true break in the sport. Honestly, I like, first of all, it's kind of funny, right? Because we it's a busy schedule all the time. It's every week, right?
Nonstop.
And then we'll get one random week off. And I'll be honest with you, like on Saturday, I'm like, at first at the beginning of the week, you're like, sweet, I can do some other stuff or whatever. And then Saturday rolls around, I'm like, there's nothing to do today. But this one is perfect, right? Because if you look at it, obviously the first week, Saturday with no UFC is Christmas. So obviously Christmas is a big time of year. There's a lot going on. Everybody's got stuff to do. The next one.
Something happened on that day?
The next one. Something has happened that day many thousands of years ago. And then the following Saturday is New Year's Eve. So that's an easy one to not have an event on.
Yeah.
And then we do get the one break and then we get back to action. But I like, so even though, and I like this end-of-year break because we don't have to do, like, the media day, the day after Christmas like we used to. You don't have the weigh-ins on New Year's Eve or whatever. So I like it. But sometimes it does feel this end of year stretch since they've moved over to ESPN feels a little bit long. But I think this one's like perfect because it's the Saturdays are like super busy. So yeah. I don't think it's going to feel that bad. I'm liking this little stretch we got coming up.
And you're absolutely right. It's one of those things that, you know, we bitch and moan about there always being events, but then like the weekend that there's not, you're like, you don't know what to do with your hands. It's like, what do I do with my hands? Like, I don't know what I'm doing.
This is what I do.
You know? But yeah, I mean, I think it's, if anything else, it's a nice, you know, just reminder to reflect back on the other stuff. I mean, we're lucky enough to cover the sport, get to travel on occasion when the road show actually does go on the road. But it is nice, you know, to be able to take the time to actually look and see, you know, I'm not going to allow myself to be missing anything this weekend, especially when now Christmas is coming up. It's just going to be relaxing, catching up on some sleep, getting out there, getting the steps in, you know, trying to get some more work in the gym,
like
you know,
I
keep
like
doing
it.
That stuff. And yeah, I mean, I just, because before we know it, we'll be back in the full swing, and I am going to be trying to be better. This year, I was really bad on like not looking ahead on like the weeks where there wasn't stuff,
right?
To plan to do stuff, like to take weeks off. And last year, I found out, you know, supposedly when Gannett and you were there when we still made that switch to the managed time off,
right.
Which suppose you could take as many days off as you needed, you know, just cover it with your manager. So even with the days I took off, and then with random days that our managing editor gave me off, I only had 17 MTO days all year long.
Which, so even before you switched over, you've been entitled like 25, right?
Yeah. You know, so it's like I'm not getting the amount. So next year I'm going to make it a point to use those days.
Because you
can't take them with you.
Not going to sit here and criticize Gannett policy. Obviously, you as a current Gannett employee, we do not want to do that, and I'm not going to bait you into it. But I will just say corporations as a whole, I read a lot about that, like as we switched over to that, and a lot of corporations, at least the studies I saw on labor found, nobody asks off for as many days as they would have guaranteed off under the previous thing because they feel kind of – you feel bad, right? You're like, oh, I don't want to ask for time off. Like, but when it's – when you've got that number that you're like, hey, bro, here's your $25. Hand me $1 back every time you take one. You feel it's a little bit – but when you're like, oh, man, can I take a couple days off, that you don't want to do it because you feel bad about it. So it's interesting. It's on the top, it's like, yeah, you get all the time
all
off
the time
you want.
Just
then you don't ask for the time off.
Yeah. And you know, it's one of those things that until you realize that you're not getting those days, until you're not taking, then you're like, wow, you know, what have I been doing? And with one of the great things that I'm hoping to happen, when everybody asks Dana, what's the plans next year? Are you trying to get on the road? Or are you going to keep doing stuff at the Apex? Of course, they're going to still do some stuff at the Apex. But Dana's like, if I could, I'd have everyone on the road.
Mm-hmm.
One's on the road. That means if I don't have to go, then it's certainly a lot easier to say, okay, I know there's an event here in Vegas. You know, I just assume that I'm going to work it because I'm here in Vegas.
Can't take off of that.
But if it's on the road somewhere, hey, how about I take that one off? You know,
Smart. So
we'll see. So part of me is like pulling for Dana to take the show
on the
road.
Get the show on the road, buddy.
You know, but I do like Apex shows. I do like the home ones as much as, you know, it can be tedious every week, you know, having to go down there. There is a sense of comfort knowing that every week there's an event as well, you know, because just like we said this week, when there's no event at the end of the week, you're like, you're kind of out of whack. You're like, on Wednesdays, normally I'm going to a media day. Thursdays, if I'm not going to the presser, I get my day off. Then Friday, I go to the weigh-ins, and then maybe I go downtown later on for the ceremony.
Our entire life is built around
the routine of UFC Fight Week.
It's
absolutely insane. And part of it's like, you know, that's probably not good, but in the same sense, you know, when it's not there, you kind of just feel out of whack, you know.
You do.
But I remember when we hadn't traveled because of the pandemic, when we were stuck at the house, those first, like, couple events, the first weeks, everything felt weird, like trying to get back into the swing. And I see the same thing from guys, journalists that don't cover the event normally, and then all of a sudden an event comes and they get on the road.
Right.
They're like, dude, I just kind of – my timing's off.
You're rusty, man.
Because you're rusty.
You're rusty.
There's ring rust when it comes to not covering an event.
Silly as that sounds.
You get in
the routine. You know the
so
feel.
Crazy.
It's just, I know to switch my memory card here. I know to drag this over here. I know if I export while this is going on, I can still look to this. And you get that balance. It's crazy. It's like you get so many reps that you know exactly how to make it flow.
Yep. And it's funny because when you're not out of that routine, you're just like, why am I like, I know I'm supposed to do something right now. What am I forgetting? What am I forgetting? And then blah, blah, blah. There is something nice about the routine, but we just got to be better on, you know, trying to find that time. And that's why I'm really happy that lately you've been getting the travel time with the family. You guys just went to Atlantic City. I mean, because you got to find the balance. And even if it's, you know, later than sooner, you've now found that balance and you're enjoying it and you're getting to reap the benefit spending the time with Eli while you can before he finally 100%. Says, I'm done hanging out with my parents.
It's and that's not so far along. And you know,
it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. I mean, that was a huge reason, you know, I made the change that I did. And part of it was, listen, I want to spend as much time as I can with my son. And it's funny because, you know, and I mentioned it here before, but I'll say it again because I think it'll resonate with parents. Is like, in my head, I was like, well, by 18, he's 10 right now, by 18, like, he's going to be out of the house because he's going to go to college somewhere. That's only 8 years away, you know what I mean? Like, I got to take advantage of it. And then my mom chimed in because I was having that conversation with her, and she's like, 18? She's like, it's only going to be a couple more years till he doesn't want to hang out with you anymore. And I was like, oh, yeah,
when
you're
he
totally
hits high school,
right.
When he hits high school, I remember what I was like in high school. The last thing I wanted to do was hang out with, like, parents or even my brothers and sisters.
Right.
I mean, like, no, if I saw him at school – cool, we did school function or what, we got wasted or
chasing
whatever.
Girls and
chasing
playing
girls.
Sports
that's
and
it.
You know what I mean, like, you're like hanging out with dad
and your kid's got a ton of sports. I mean, like, mm-hmm. he's gonna have plenty of opportunities to not be home.
Yeah,
you know, like, it's gonna get to the point where you're gonna be like, we need to get this kid a car so he can take his own ass to all these things, and then you're gonna see him even less.
I know it's great. We got to do Atlantic City this past weekend.
6 years. You got 6 years,
maybe less. I think 14, 15. Well, at least 16 you have a car, and then you can leave. 14, 15 you may not want to hang out with me, but you ain't got no car, so you gotta hang out with me.
Because you're absolutely right. 14, 15 he's not gonna want to hang out, but he's gonna be stuck with
16
you
got a car and you're now gone and I'm not seeing you anymore. But yeah, we went to Atlantic City this past weekend. It was fun. First of all, I'll tell you, if you have not seen CFFC 116 and you are fiending for a little bit of some MMA to watch, check out the show, man. It was a really, really good show, man. Action-packed, a bunch of big highlights and, you know, comeback finishes and crazy turnarounds. It was just a really, really good show. I had a lot of fun working with my man CM Punk. But, yeah, had my wife there, had my son there, had my mom there as well, and we stayed an extra day. Actually skipped the UFC event just so we could stay an extra day.
Two in a row.
It's crazy. I know. I felt weird, man. I watched the prelims in my hotel room. And first of all, shout out to CFFC and shout out to the Hard Rock Atlantic City, because they knew my family was coming and they hooked me up with an executive suite. So we had this insane
Baller.
Oh man, insane, bro. I can't even tell you how big this room was, and it had like a 75-inch, 80-inch TV in it as well in the living room, and so that's where we ended up watching the World Cup the next day. And but anyway, you know, so watched the prelims in the room, then went and had dinner at Il Molino, which is a really nice Italian restaurant there inside the Hard Rock Hotel. Hard Rock Hotel Atlantic City is nice. If you can go see a show there, super, super nice. Went and had dinner there, and then went out to a club, man. We actually went to a club that was playing like 70s, 80s, and 90s music, and had a good time. A little bottle service over there, maybe a little bit too much bottle service, and then watched the World Cup next day.
Too much bottle service with you? What?
Well,
dude, but
I know
that final.
Oh my god!
Holy cow!
I love soccer, and so I planned it. So I was like, look, we're gonna stay an extra day. And then Sunday is the World Cup final. I was like, I want to watch that. So I was like, let's get an evening flight.
So they were
flight.
On their own. No. They were on their own while you watched it. Did they watch
no,
it
No, they
you?
Watched it with me. Yeah, oh, yeah. Wow. They watched it with me. So I scheduled our flights. So I was like, let's take an evening flight so I can watch the World Cup final. And it was funny because about 70 minutes in, I'll be honest, I was cheering for Argentina. I wanted to see Messi get his. You know, but about 70 minutes in, it's 2-0, and they're just cruising, and France is playing flat. And I'm like, I didn't really need to stay here the whole day to watch this. I'm like, I could have just gone home and watched the highlights.
Then in the span of 2 minutes.
Oh, my gosh. Then they even it up. And then in the overtime, you know what I mean, the extra time is the goals back and forth and the penalty kicks. I mean, phenomenal World Cup final. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a fun weekend. I got to hang out with the family. And, it's been, you know, between that and the Thanksgiving trip with PFL, and it's been a fun way to close the year. It's not something I can continue to do. The pocketbook will not allow me to continue bringing the family on board all these trips. But it is, man. It's so important. You know, I was talking to – and again, I mean, maybe we're waxing a little poetic today, but there's not a ton of it maybe to talk about. But I was talking to Damon Jackson yesterday, actually, and, you know, I was asking him. He's got his fight coming up with Dan Ige. I was asking him, hey, are you going to use Action, you know, as your nickname? Because you remember he used that last time for his brother that has passed away. It was his brother. His older brother was always Action Jackson on the football field. And so he took that moniker on. But I was like, are you going to keep it? Because it's a touching tribute, you know what I mean? But at the same time, like, do you want that little pinch of emotion right before a fight's about to start, you know what I mean, where you dialed in and Buffer's saying your name and maybe you think about your brother. And he was like, no, 100%. He's like, I'm going to keep that as my name. He's like, and not just for my brother, but just to remind me, he's like, man, my brother was 37 years old, dude. He's like, nothing is guaranteed. He's like, do not waste a single day of your life. He's like, I want to remind me to go hard 100% to take care of my family, to spend every day. And it's so true, man. It's just – especially, man, I don't know. That just has resonated with me so much. Like, anything I can do with my son, anything I can do with family right now, like, I want to do it, you know? So, anyway.
So, we got to come up with a nickname for you then. Because if Action Jack, but if Action rhymes with, Action Jackson sort of rhymes.
It does. Yeah, it does.
So, what are we going to do? We got to have a nickname for you that means you'd embrace the day, but rhymed with Morgan.
Not a lot of good ones out there.
I know, not, right?
Yeah. Not a lot of good Morgan rhyming names other than Oregon or something, which can be taken in a lot of different ways. Yeah. So,
well, we got to work on that. We got to figure something out. When you lay it out like that, I mean, it's a powerful message, and it's true. I mean, and maybe that's just one of those things at end of the year, before the start of the new year, when everybody normally does their resolutions. This is that time of year where everybody's like, what can I do better next year? There, you know, we just had Thanksgiving where everybody thinks about and reflects upon what they're thankful for. But now here we are at the end of the year, you know, and I think it points back in your face the importance of family, your health, what you're doing with yourself, and then going into the new year, what you want to, how you want to capitalize, you know, going forward. So, I love Damon Jackson. I mean, like,
how
can you not like that dude? It's funny you say that, but I remember just seeing the picture online of how Fortis celebrated their – had like a Christmas party or something like that, you know, and you're looking at all the faces there. Man, what a good gym and good people. So, yeah, it's that time of the year, man. You know, time to be thankful, time to reflect upon what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and what we need to fix for next year, and have some fun and keep this ball rolling.
For instance.
Yeah.
I promise next year to not drop any F-bombs at the airport and nearly get arrested.
Yeah, you should probably not do that.
I told the full story on the NF episode, but yeah, I almost got arrested at the airport trying to get home from Philadelphia. That wasn't.
See?
Don't drop F-bombs.
People always say that I have F-bomb. Now I'm having speaking problems. This is why I don't drink anymore. I can't speak anymore. And people say I have F-bomb problems. I don't think I've ever been not allowed to board anything because of my language.
They tried to slow play me so that I wouldn't get on and I'd get locked out. That's a long story. I'm not gonna get. I've let it go. I've let the emotions go. Yes.
Let it go.
I've let my frustration and anger go. I have forgiven them for their trespasses upon me, and I am happy now. I will remind everybody, by the way. So, go watch CFFC 116 if you haven't seen it. I'm telling you, there were some really good fights, and I'll put it on the radar. Make sure you circle the calendar for December 30th because we've got Fury Professional Grappling 6 on UFC Fight Pass as well. I think we're at the latest count right now. I think we have 11 UFC athletes on the roster that. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun one.
Where's that one?
2300 Arena in Philadelphia. So
Philly.
Yeah, heading back out to Philly Thursday. Chicago. He's a Chicago guy.
That's right. Yeah. Right,
so
right.
Heading back out there on Thursday. Events on Friday, flying home on Saturday, and then you know, we could talk about it a little bit next week, of course, but that Bellator Rising card, that'll be on New Year's Eve as well. I think that's a great card as well.
Do you call that a Bellator Rising card, or do you call it a Rising Bellator?
Well, technically it is a Rising card. I guess I say Bellator Rising just because Bellator is like the higher profile, but it really is a Rising card because they just said it was just easier to do that, and then they'll make the next one a Bellator card because it's going to be their rules. It's going to be, but dude, I love it, man. The press,
it's going to be great.
The press conference the conference media call that they had yesterday, were Scott Coker and Saki Gabara on there. I loved it because Coker just laid it out there, and it's 100% true. He's like, look, you put your risk on the line, because that's what this is all about, right? I mean, the
reputation of your brand and your promotion.
The reputation of your brand is on the line. He's like, but that's the martial arts way. That's what you should do. Now, listen. There's more reasons why promotions don't co-promote a lot in terms of, like, for instance, who has the TV deal, you know, who gets the sponsorship dollars, you know what I mean? So there's it's more than just putting your reputation on the line, but that is a huge part of it, right? Because if you're Bellator and you go over and you take that roster that you took, and let's say for some strange-ass reason, maybe it's because your guys aren't used to fighting in a ring, maybe it's because they're not used to the, you know, the soccer kicks and the stomps, and they get caught because they're like, oh, I thought I was safe there and I wasn't. Weird things can happen, and I favor a lot of the Bellator fighters, but weird things can happen. What if you're Bellator and you roll over there and you go 0-5?
Yeah.
And then you got to – guess what? You got to jump back on a plane, fly back home, and yep. you got to put your arms around it. No, these are the best fighters in the world. We got the best in the world. I'm like, didn't they just go over to Japan to get their ass beat? Yeah. But don't worry about that. Tune in to Showtime this Friday night.
We got a pay-per-view coming up. We want you to really pay for it.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I'm telling you. So I applaud them for doing this, and I'm excited about it. It's not quite Pride versus UFC level back in the day, but it's the start of something, man. And I'm really excited to see the card. I will say though, and again, we've got another week episode next week that we can help continue to preview this. But the fact that we got to catch it on tape delay here is a little bit wonky.
Yeah,
I'm not happy about that.
I mean, the one thing, you know, like you said, it's tough to, you know, put your reputation of your company on the line. You know, I could hear Dana ultimately say, well, it's not the UFC that's fighting, it's the fighters. You know, I mean, every fighter has a good day, a bad day, you know, but there is something
well done
that can be
that
said
good.
About
yep. yeah. well done to get yourself out of that yeah. one. I like that.
There is something to be said about, you know, if somebody is strong in a particular market and you want to reach those fans that love a particular promotion in that area, this is what this is doing. I mean, like, Ryzen has their followers that absolutely love and adore what they want, you know, and we've seen some crossover in the past with the Bellator, but what better to introduce, you know, the stars of your organization with their fans, I mean, mm-hmm. and vice versa, you know. I think most people that are watching Bellator are probably already well-versed with the cream of the crop of the Ryzen guys that are going to be doing this, but still, there is something about being able to introduce yourself to another promotion's fan base. I think the UFC probably would be like, you know, well, those people already probably like us, or if they don't like us by now, who needs them? You know, we have our own markets. But there is something to be said about, you know, if you can use the strength of one particular brand in another market to give yourself a foothold, why wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
You know, as long as the dollars make sense and if the promotion makes sense and there's, you know, you're both sharing the load and you're both kind of the A side. I mean, there's always going to be a sort of A side depending on where the broadcast is happening. You know, in America, it's going to be Bellator.
Right.
You know, overseas, it's going to be Ryzen, you know. But the being able to work it out where it makes sense together, I mean, it just – I think the positives that come out of it definitely benefit in ways – outweighs, you know, any risk that maybe – okay, maybe some of our guys might lose – you know, still, I mean, you're going to be introducing them to people that maybe have never watched them before.
Yep.
And ultimately, those are the people that you want to, you know, look at your product.
Yep.
And Bellator hasn't shied away from going overseas to all these other little markets that nobody's going to. I mean, they do multiple events in like Italy and all other places that nobody else is going to right now. I mean, they're doing all the right things. You know, people want to criticize, you know, maybe how well the pay-per-view did and other stuff, but, you know, maybe if it's like a bit of a slow roll, or, you know, they're still building strength and they're building strength in other markets, you know, and the UFC, I don't know if they could say the same, you know. It's been a while since they broke into a new market, and even then, you know, sometimes it's maybe not as good as they want to do anyway. So why not use a well-built fan base already in an area to help break into that market?
Well, you know? The UFC has such a dominant foothold. Like, I understand why they're not interested in co-promotion whatsoever and why it doesn't do them, because all it is the UFC is head and shoulders above everybody, and that's just honest. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying
fighting for number two.
I'm not saying in quality of fights. I'm not saying in quality of athletes. I'm just saying in terms of brand recognition,
right.
market share, they are far and away the biggest. And so for them, they're just reaching down and pulling somebody up, right? But everybody else, man, everybody else out there, that, like you said, they're fighting for number two. Man, I think they should try. And it's not easy to do. Even Coker said, and, you know, Coker and Saka Kabar have known each other for 20 years.
A long time.
They've worked together.
Yep.
They trust each other. And even Coker said, it's not easy to do this. There's yep. hurdles along the way. There's things. So even for two guys that are that close to admit, hey, this isn't easy, I'm not blamed, but I would think everybody out there, every other organization out there, should just be at least willing to be
willing.
Like, why don't we do a one-off here? Why don't we do a series? Yep. You know, we'll just do a home-and-home series with this one, or, you know, like college football sets up, right?
I mean,
you know?
Yes. I mean, I think that's the smartest thing. Like, if you think that, oh, man, why do we have to go to your place? Bro, just next time we'll do it at mine, at yours.
We'll sign up for two fights.
Yeah.
I'll do one in yours. You
idea.
Do one in mine, and,
yeah.
and we just talent share for that.
It makes so much sense. It makes so much sense. I mean, I get it. You know, like, there's, you know, different organization. Every organization has their own cultural sort of scenario, you know, how it's run, you know, might somehow bash heads with how you run your organization. But if you have a mutual benefit where you guys can come to the table and actually talk things out,
yeah,
it certainly makes a lot of sense for the smaller organizations to try to build it. I mean, how else are you going to be able to, you know, like I said, just keep getting a foothold in other markets? Because a lot of times you're just trying to make your inroads into another market on your own.
It's tough.
Sometimes it's cost prohibitive, and sometimes your organization, you just run differently, that you don't have that built-in respect that a lot of places want. You know, you try to go to a lot of Asian countries, they expect, if it's not run by an Asian or something, they might not even want to even talk to you to get in the door. But if you have a history working with it, okay, this person, this business has shown themselves to be respectful, they sort of have the same sort of mindset, okay, we could talk with them, you know. And a lot of times that just, you know, just by doing these little sort of things, I mean, it pays itself off. But,
and especially, as you said, in a new market. Like, I get it. If it's somebody that you're, you know, in your market that you're trying to, like, battle for ticket sales.
Then you are bringing somebody – then you are pulling somebody up.
Right.
You're like, you're normally my competitor.
Yeah, yeah,
I get
that.
But going into new markets, for sure. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Like, if you're the guy that runs that area over there and I want to get into your market, if I can work with you and you help me get my foot in the door so where that place is more open to me coming to do business around that area – we don't. Yes, we might be competitors, but there's nothing wrong with strong, good competition, because as long as there's a strong fan base that wants content, they're going to look multiple places for it. People don't watch one show and be like, okay, man, I feel really good. I watched a fight this weekend. I don't need to watch anything else for a week.
So true.
You know, most people are like, dude, I really like this sport. I want more. And it's tough for one organization. I remember when Fight Pass wasn't able to have a 24/7 channel when you went to the thing. They just didn't quite have the content. But they've been curating. They've been curating it. Same with ESPN. They were taking as much as they could until they could start building up that thing. And it's the same thing for everyone everywhere. There's never enough content just in one particular organization to handle the desire everywhere. So why not, you know, work together and help bring everybody up? Because still your product and the content that you put out is going to differentiate itself, because you might look at Bellator and what they put out. You look at Rising and what they put out. You look at ONE Championship, what they put out. You look at UFC. They all have their unique sort of differences in how they do it. They're all in the same sort of space, but you have people that, like, well, even outside of just like junkies like us that watch it all, but you have people that watch multiple different stuff that aren't paid to watch this particular stuff. So there's always going to be a need for it, you know. And I mean, they just got to keep at it. So I think it makes sense to deal with other people. And just like when we see other media outlets, we realized a long time ago that it does no good to just hate on your competitors and not want to work with your competitors, because at some point down the line, you're going to need something from them.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it might mean, hey, I want to get in that market. You know, we've been able – I know we're competitors, but if we can do something that helps scratch your back and it scratches my back and we both make money out of it, why not?
I agree.
You know?
I agree. I applaud these guys for doing it.
I wish more people would follow their lead. I mean, and you hear that over and over again about the respect that fighters have for Coker, the respect that the fighters have for the organizations that are doing this. I mean – there's a reason why they respect him, because these guys are open to different other things and they're taking care of their people, you know?
I love it. I'm looking forward to it. So mark your calendars. The 30th, you're watching Fury Professional Grappling. The 31st, you're avoiding spoilers because it's going to be aired in prime time, but it'll already be done in the day. But you want to watch it.
What's your best tips for avoiding spoilers?
Just stay off your phone.
Yeah.
Totally got to stay off your phone.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah, put your phone down, face down. Don't get on it.
Be enjoying your family.
It's New Year's
Eve.
It's New Year's Eve. Have a nice day. Watch some college football or something like that. I'm sure there's some good games on the 31st. Is that when the playoffs start? Is it 31st or
30th or 31st?
Or just some games. Watch some games.
There's definitely games. Like, there's ball games starting like early on.
I mean, that's what you do on New Year's. Even if you're not a college football fan, you throw some college football on in the background, right?
Because there's so many random bowl games. It's nuts.
You put that on. You keep your phone away. You enjoy the time with your family. Then you tune on Showtime via tape delay. Or maybe you just watch the replay of Fury Professional Grappling again during the day. I mean, because you know it's going to be so good on the 30th that you're like, you know what? I gotta watch that again. 31st, man. I got John Morgan and CM Punk were so good on the mic. I gotta watch that back. And then you watch that via tape. All right, listen, the ongoing conversation continues to be associated around MMA judging, and understandably so. I will say, you and I haven't talked about it, but this past weekend's main event between Jared Cannonier and Sean Strickland, even though there were opposing 49-46s where every round was scored exactly opposite from two judges,
it's so crazy.
I'm going to be honest with you and just say I don't really have a problem with it. Like, that fight, I watched it on a plane on the way home, And I'm literally, I mean, round by round, I'm minuscule little fractions. I ended up going 1-3-5, Jared Cannonier, 2-4 for Strickland. But even that, I can't say that, like, I really just feel like that is the proper score. You know, so I don't know about you, but to be as weird as the scores were this past weekend, I feel like that fight was so damn close. You just really can't get pissed at the judges.
Yeah, I mean, it was close. I did, in my head, when I was watching it, you know, and it's funny, it's hard to not sort of, even though I know it's not that whole total, you know, the total fight taken into account for how you grade it, you know. But when I think about when I was watching it, obviously we're doing interviews and other sort of stuff and trying to get other stuff done. But every time I looked up there, it was always Jared Cannonier that was pushing the pace. It was pushing in the direction. I mean, Strickland was, you know, doing his sort of thing, going out there and going for it. But it was always a jab here, a jab there. And I just felt like there was more work coming from Jared's side. So when it got to the end, I would have to rewatch to say, okay, I think it was this round. I had that overall feeling that I felt like he did the more work in the overall fight, so I was going to give him the nod. But I did sort of feel that it was, if I had to say 3-2, that it felt like that, that it was definitely Jared.
Yep.
I just felt like Strickland could have did more. I just felt like I wanted to see him do more and get more just more big shots where I'd feel like, oh, wow, you know, I never got that feeling. So when it came down to it, I didn't by any means feel like it was a robbery, but I was also very sort of surprised when I heard a judge give it kind of crazy all in his direction, because I was just like, I don't remember him really ever controlling a particular round to the point where I was just like, I just felt like they made it seem like it was dominant. I thought it was going to be unanimously in Jared's direction, so I was a little surprised that it wasn't. But it did. Both of them were just very, very sort of respectful of their striking. They both knew that they had that sort of power. But I was just surprised it stayed standing like so primarily. And it was just sort of – it wasn't like a slobber knocker by any means.
Like a sparring match at times. You know?
It was just kind of like – it was just sparse striking you know, that went through. And I know that Sean was kind of putting up, you know, numbers of like rounds and strikes and stuff. But like for me, it didn't feel like I ever saw a round where like there was like a heavy disparity.
Where you could just claim
victory. Where I was just like, oh, my God, Sean just clearly outstruck him.
Right.
It was just like a jab here, you know, just kind of walking forward, jab here. But then you'd see Jared come with a 1-2, you know, a couple of two shots, a nice little combos. And it was those combos that kept adding up in my mind that made it feel like he was getting the better of the connections and stuff. So it's like Sean might have, you know, threw 4 or 5 jabs in there, but I'd see that one good 2-3 combo, you know, and then you're just like, wow, I really felt like that was kind of leaning towards Jared, you know, just in terms of the action. But and I just I asked for him to come back in the back, and the UFC said he politely declined.
Interesting.
And then we see him go on Instagram, like, right after. I was like, bro, he could have had the whole room. I don't know why he didn't want or why he chose not to.
That's interesting.
But I definitely reached out, and the UFC staff went and asked him. Because I even asked them the other guys in the room. They were like, because I'm not going to name names, but some are like, well, why'd you ask for him? I was like, because, bro, you know, he's going to – anything he says is going to be better than what Jared's going to give us afterwards. Like, no offense to Jared.
From a views perspective, Sean drives the views.
Yeah, I mean, like, Sean, whatever Sean says, I mean
– and it was such a close fight, I wouldn't hate to hear. And it's something like – you know, it'd be different if it was, like, a clear one-sided thing and, it, you know, he definitely didn't win. Like, I always say, like, if guys – get their ass beat, like, don't force them to come talk to the media.
Yeah, and if they're
like,
almost concussed, or if they are concussed, the last thing I'm going to do is, like, yes, please drag him in front of this dog and pony show.
Yeah.
But, and then it was clearly, you could tell he was upset, and I was like, oh, well, let's give him a chance to say something. Because I remember somebody was like, why'd you ask for him? I was like, because it's fucking Sean. Like, don't you think he'd want to say anything?
Razor thin.
But then he was like, they said he politely declined, and then before we even left
was already on
the building,
IG Live.
He had already, you know, went and said how he was, you know, sort of disgusted. I was like, bro, he could have said it on us. I don't know if he...
Maybe he's like, I'll get my views, you don't get your views.
Or he was just like, I want to say what I want
to
say, and
not
I don't want
anything.
I don't want to have to answer any questions of whether I could have did more,
could've,
you know, what
that.
Rounds, you know. I mean, I get it, you know, like, I just felt like, you know, don't say that we didn't give you a chance to say anything.
Right.
A lot of times we get all that, you know, fighters say that all the time. Why aren't you asking for the losers?
Right.
You know, and it's just like in this case, this could have been definitely contested. There were some people that thought it could have went the other way. Well, let's give them that shot.
A lot of times we don't ask to speak to the fighter that lost because we want to allow them their peace and not have to deal with us. Just to let the record reflect that.
Well, but you know, 9 out of 10 times too. I mean, they've also been injured or something like that.
So I'm saying for their own. So my take on judging has always been, and I believe this for years. I mean, I've been covering the sport for a long, long time. And I've stood around all the time and I've heard, we need a half-point system. We need the pride system. And I have always said that, look, the 10-9 system that we have, I don't believe is a perfect system by any stretch. But I do believe it can work. And what I've always said is that, to me, it's not about just, you know, what system we're using. It's about how the system is administered and how it's maintained and how it's, you know, the education process with the judges. You know, getting qualified judges, making sure they're educated, making sure it's constant improvement. And I've heard a lot of people say, and fairly so, that, look, it's not a well-compensated position. So to ask that they put in these hours of training or that they be registered or whatever, it's not a realistic assessment. But I disagree with that. It's not a great-paying job, but it is a job that you can make some money off of. And it's very, very important, you know, that this stuff is done.
Especially for the fighters whose well-being and their money book pays
massive.
It kind of, in that sense, it makes it sound really bad. It's like you're going to underpay the people that actually have a heavy opportunity to affect a fighter's pay. And this fighter might only fight twice a year.
Right.
And if you have something that's like, well, I'm only doing it just for the little bit of penny money. I'm not really happy doing this. It's not worth my time because I'm not really getting paid. It's like, you're the last person that should be in that role.
Exactly.
That's
if that's what you're saying, because there's a bunch of people that are passionate about that would love to like, do it in a just way.
Get the F out.
So I've always said that I think, you know, to me, and I've said it from the beginning, and I'll keep saying this because I believe it's the truth. Like I said, I think that these guys should have constant education. I think there should be a constant, transparent, essentially like evaluation system
like
and
score
a review process 100% where when you say, you know, why were those three judges selected for the title fight? Well, the reason they were selected for the title fight is because if you look at our current rankings of how performance, they're the three performing at the highest level of performance right now. That's why I'm going with them. I think it should be constantly monitored, and I think it should be transparent. I have no issue whatsoever with it being a publicly posted number. This judge is the one that's, you know, and again, I know that the evaluation process isn't necessarily easy because how do you determine what, you know, their performance should have been, et cetera. But I think that it can be developed and I think it can be put in place. So that's been my thing, is that I think the system can work, the 10-point must system can work, but it's got to have constant education, it's got to have constant evaluation, and I think that that would benefit hugely. The other thing that I've always said is I would like to have transparency from the people in charge. Okay, I want to hear, why did a judge make that decision? What was it? Because I think if I can hear that a judge listened to, you know, they know the criteria, they cited the criteria, and this is what they observed. Now, I may disagree with them, but at least I know, okay, hold on. This person knows the criteria. This person definitely knows what they're watching, and this is how they interpret it. And maybe they made a mistake, but at least I know. But we don't get that. But I set that all up to say that because one thing I've always said is that I understand why that these officials aren't allowed to go speak to the media. And that's why I think it could be an executive director. It could be a media representative. It could be somebody that speaks for them. Because this Doug Crosby interview with Chael Sonnen, now he's done this before. And I'm not doing this just to throw Doug Crosby under the bus. But if you haven't listened to it, go listen to it. It's on Chael Sonnen's podcast. About a 38-minute interview, I believe. Now listen. Chael and him are buddies, so to call it an interview, it's not a real formal interview, and so because of that, it kind of takes some weird flows here and there, and they kind of go off on tangents that don't really have anything to do with anything. So a lot of it, I think, is just essentially kind of wasted time and discussion between two friends. But I think when you get down to what's being addressed and any type of defense of the controversial scorecards as of late, it's not there. It's just not there. To be honest with you, I don't think the interview does Doug Crosby any justice whatsoever to defend himself or to make himself look any better. I mean, you know, the quote that I saw a lot of people grabbing with and running with, which is 100% true, is where Doug Crosby says, you know, think about it, man. I've got to watch 5 minutes of this and then only get a couple seconds, you know, to make a decision and to put down a numerical value, and that's very difficult to do. Well, anybody that's been through the process will say you're supposed to be scoring as you go along because if there's
like
a foul,
are you doing up to that point?
Well, that's it. If there's a foul and the round ends, you know, you're supposed to be able to turn in a partial score. So at that time, you've got it. You have to have the score in your head as it goes. And there is, you know, there is something to be said for, you know, for anybody that doesn't know how it works. And I think most of the people listening here will, but just in case you don't. You know, the judges do turn in their score at the end of each round, and essentially the round ends and a fourth official is on the outside and they immediately take the piece of paper from the first person, then they go to the second person, then they go to the third person, then they take that all back to the scorekeeper at the table, and the scorekeeper writes it all down. Now, I will say there is something to be said for if you're in that first chair position, essentially as soon as the bell sounds, that guy's reaching out for your card. So you are kind of under the gun of like, you better know what your 10-9 is right now. Now, I can't imagine if you were like, hang on. Okay, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine if you said, I need two beats just to guarantee in my head that you would get it. Now, but so you can argue if you're in that third position, you get more time. But, yeah, you need that. So, again, I just it's a weird thing because I want transparency from these people. But in this situation, we kind of got transparency. And I don't think Doug Crosby did himself any favors whatsoever. And I think if you ever wonder sometimes when we say, well, why can't these people talk to the media? Why aren't they allowed to go speak to us? This is why.
Yeah, and there's nothing that says a judge can't be making notes or doing whatever as the fight's going on. I would think if I see something that's something where 100%. Even if you're like halfway through the round, you could already be jotting to yourself of points that you think like you said a foul. If you need to have specific things like that that said, all right, if there's a point deduction, do you forget that, or do you have to write it down or do whatever? You figure like there's a running tally in your head as that round's going on. And then you just adjust it as the thing's going on. You know, when it starts, okay, both guys are 10-10. Okay, one guy's starting to get in the better strikes, whatever. Okay, now I'm leading 10-9. Okay, now I need to deduct a point because of this. Okay, now it's a 9-9.
Yep.
You know, and if you need to be taking notes, I mean, there's nothing that says you don't.
There's 100% not anything that says it. And, in fact, I would highly encourage it, man. Yep. Has to know, and you'll see some of the top judges that do have their notes with them. And it doesn't need to be – I mean, obviously, you don't want to take your eyes off the action to write, like, whole sentences or something.
Right.
But what's wrong with having like okay, I got red corner here, I got blue corner here, I got two columns. I'm gonna put, you know, significant strikes. It's not significant strikes in the way that it's counted in the stats, but I mean like a strike that stood out to me is like, ooh, that one got him.
Right.
I'll get that. Or I got like a takedown right here. And all I wanna do is something happens, I just put a little tick, tick, tick. You know, and now I've got kind of official stat. Not official stat, but stats for me.
Yeah, because they don't have access to the stats that we see on TV, and I think a lot of times people forget. They're like, well, man, this guy, you know, when they show the stats after, they're like, well, he had 38 strikes. The other guy had 21.
They don't know that.
They don't know that.
Right.
You know, they have to gauge each of those little moments. But there's nothing that says they can't sort of follow along, keep tracking, especially if you're the kind of guy that's like, wow, I only have 2 minutes to gather my thoughts, or less than 2 minutes. Yeah. I have seconds. Well, then you need to change your process. Like, there's something wrong with your process if you're
well
only
said.
At the point where you're only thinking about the round after the round's done.
Well said.
What are you doing the rest of the time? You know, it doesn't sound like you're doing an effective use of your time. It sounds like you're just space case sitting in the seat. And then you're like, okay, I have 10 seconds to reflect on that round. What do I remember? Oh, shit, well, guy's coming to get my score. Let me just put a number down.
I did years and years and years and years of play-by-play for MMA Junkie, right? Where every Saturday night I was the dude doing play-by-play for the entire card.
Yeah.
And I can tell you on numerous occasions over the years, round ends – and I would go back and read, like skim through my play-by-play real quick just to remember, hold on, what happened at the first, what happened at the second one? And I'm like, you know, in my head, I'm like, I think 10-9, but you always want to confirm yourself. Hold on. Okay. Yeah. No. And I would just skim through my play-by-play of that round before I'd write down my score. Same thing, man. Yep. And I think you nailed it right there. Not having the problem. If you're saying that that's an impossible task, then change your process, right?
Change your process.
And a little bit of notes, a little bit of something will be there. So, I don't know. I heard that, and I'm not trying to pile on Doug Crosby, man. I know that, you know, he kind of alluded to the fact that he's open to criticism but feels attacked at sometimes. And I know this is a thankless job, right? Because when you get it right, I mean, nobody ever goes back and goes, man, those judges absolutely killed it. Can we give them a little bonus tonight? When you get it right, it's just, well, you did your job and you got it right. And when you get it wrong or when you see something different, you take loads of abuse. Yep. For, again, what we said is not that much money. So I do not want to make it any worse for Doug Crosby than it has to be. I'm not trying to do that. I'm trying to be respectful by this. But I would say I don't believe that interview that he gave to Chael Sonnen did himself any favors whatsoever. And I don't think it helped the craft in terms of us saying, I would love for these guys to be able to be more transparent and to be able to speak. When things like this happen, that's just going to have the commission going, you see?
Yep.
You see? We can't let these guys talk to the media. Yeah. You know? And so I –
because he spoke out of line. It seemed like he wasn't in line with some of the stuff he said with what the actual rules are. I mean, it does make me want to – you know, I know recently some journalists and media were able to kind of go through – the different classes to just follow along with what the judge, and I think that'd be a great idea. I wish they would do that more often and so others could do it. But yeah, it just felt like some things were sort of out of line. But, you know, recently we talked about last week how end of the year, one of the last things on the commission, they showed all these different judges that were up for review or up for renewal for the next year. What does that mean? Do they think about, okay, do they even review like their past year? Do they look at the past things, their past performances? Or does it, like every other time we see one of these big, huge line items on one of these commissions, there's a set of options that are presented. The other commissioner said, executive commissioner, is this what you think is good?
And you grab anybody the rubber stamp and you dip it in the ink.
And then they just blank, it's gone. You know, it'd be nice to know that. What does that really mean when something's up for renewal? Does that mean there's been a review process of the past year to say, okay, they've made that, you know, they've up to muster, they've done the job? Or is it just like, okay, well, obviously this person did, 13 events, so obviously they're probably still in good shape. Let's just greenlight them for next year. I think if anything else, there needs to be a better just sort of review process just to make sure that the right candidates are getting forward. I guarantee there's not a shortage of judges willing to do it. Whether there's a shortage of quality judges and it just takes reps. Well, if you're just blank rubber stamping the past year's judges without actually reviewing and making sure that they're the top people in there, how about replacing them with somebody? Let them get some 100% experience, and then let somebody that's really enjoying and understanding and doing the job at a high level get those gigs. Don't just be the let me reward my buddy.
And I hate to say this, because when you say good old boy network, like
that's what it feels like.
I think that sometimes has some negative connotations. I think good old boy network may even have like racial connotations to it, but
well,
not
sense,
saying
yeah,
that, not saying
yeah,
that,
yeah.
You know what I mean? But saying that, like, hey, it's the people I know. Hey, he's always been here. We've always done this. Supposedly, and I've been told that Bob Bennett did actually have a system where he tracked the judges, and and you see like MMA Decisions does it, percentage of, decisions where you were on the wrong side, where you had the wrong decision. And what I was told is the one flaw in that system is, let's say you're a highly qualified judge and you happen to be put together with two maybe less qualified judges, and you actually score it right but they score it wrong, you actually get the negative mark there because you were the one that was on the wrong side of the decision.
I got
you see what I'm saying?
You went against the
even though technically you scored it right, because you went against them two that scored it wrong, you actually get a negative mark. So there's a flaw in that system.
Dissenting judge.
Because you're the dissenting judge, right? So you got to consider that when you say dissenting judge. Remember that doesn't necessarily mean wrong judge. You can be right.
Right.
I don't know what the right way to do it is. Whether it would be we have, the guy that we trust as the judge of all judges. It can't be a John McCarthy now that he's on the broadcast side of it. But I don't know. If you had somebody that you were like, this is the most educated judge, or maybe
I do like that interview he came out where he said that
his son got it wrong.
On
so at least he's going to be straight up about it, right? So I don't know if it would be that, or
that's
I don't know
be an awkward Christmas dinner.
Yeah, hey, bud, for that. So funny.
Can you pass the stuffing? No, Dad, I will not pass the stuffing.
Sorry, I don't know which decision to make here. Should I or should I not? Am I making the right decision here, Dad?
Did you really want the potatoes and not the stuffing?
But I don't know what the system would it be. Taking the MMA media scores, which again, that gets into a whole nother ball. Like, who's actually qualified? Are you taking the scores of people who haven't even passed the certification test?
Yeah.
Like, what is it? So I don't know whether it be, but I would love to see some kind of standard, and not just the decision as a whole, but maybe just every single round that you score, and then that all goes into a database. I mean, I'm sure we're probably getting to some point where AI can determine who should be the proper winner. I don't know, but and then
isn't that like the. It was at PFL. What do they call it? Isn't that an AI score?
Oh, yeah. What do they call it? PFR or something? You're right. I will say, out of all of the – that and the – and like I think like the punch speed or whatever, the two things that like I just don't even look at.
Yeah. Did you see the I'm just running off on a crazy tangent, just thinking about AI shit. Did you see that little video of Chris Curtis, his mouth guard?
Yeah.
That it was custom tracking, like the strikes and other stuff. Like the technology is getting so good. So, I mean, like it makes sense that eventually somebody could – sort of do it. But I mean, I think there is still an algorithm. There is, you can't just purely take it
it's
on numbers.
It's got human element. It's got
you
human
can't
element.
Take it purely
you can't.
On numbers.
But so anyway, I would like to see again, every judge measured against some standard. And then those judges, again, who's getting the highest assignments? What's the one that's 95% of their rounds are what you would expect to be the result?
Yep.
You know what I mean? Who's got the highest versus the lowest variance? And all these things, that's where I think we need to get to. So when it's like, this system doesn't work, we need to go, half-point system, we need to go full. To me, it's not that, man. To me, it is making sure we are actively evaluating, actively educating, actively tracking, and rewarding the best with the best assignments, and the ones that are the lowest, we work with them, that they have to take extra training, or they have to do shadow judging, or whatever. You know what I mean? That, to me, is how we get better.
Yeah, and it probably certainly wouldn't – I mean, I'm just going to be the weird controversy guy now, especially when these guys are underpaid. They're not getting paid a lot of money. You know, people were starting to look at crazy things with the whole Kraus situation, the betting thing, where people were starting to look at, okay, there was a crazy betting swing. You know, what possibly changed things? Now you have underpaid people that are controlling and swinging things. I'm not trying to say, like, these judges are dirty, but if you start tracking stuff, how many questionable calls are in some things? And these are by people that are underpaid, as everybody says, and making these crazy things that are
not
swinging,
making any insinuations, but let's rule it out.
At some point, yeah. I mean, if you're tracking the numbers and if there's a crazy red flag on some of these things, it should be tracked. There should be a review process where somebody's like, why did random X guy here make these massive wrong decisions where he was the dissenting person? And I get it where, you know, this guy says, hey, you can't pay attention to public comment. You know, at some point you just got to focus on your job. But if you have 50 different people out there that are judging a thing and 50 say it's one thing, they're not calling each other up to say, hey, bro, let's pick this guy just so we can make it look. There's something to be said.
Right.
You know, people need to look at that. If 50 outside observers for different organizations can say, this is clearly the score, but you have a random outlier over here, you need to be able to say and understand why that is. And part of that, unfortunately, you need to take the equation out. Is this person on the level? Is he being legit? You know, because if they're willing to think that a coach for a team can maybe sway things, how about the people that are actually making the decisions on whether or not a fighter wins or lose? That's where I think there needs to be some better thing. And what better way to combat people starting to think like, well, is this judge legit, than to have some sort of system that tracks and understands how they're actually
I got the data
deciding.
To
I got
back
the
it
data
up.
To back it up. It just makes sense. And let there be a review process. Because if there's no review process and you don't have the data, there's always going to be people questioning whether or not the judge is on a level is scoring it on the level.
Yep.
It just makes sense. I mean, it's there's too much money involved, and there's too much, even just thinking about, there's too much money involved on these fighters' lives to have somebody, you know, go in there maybe just wishy-washy and whatever, you know, what's going on. And every judge that goes in there needs to be at the top of their game, because every fighter that's going in there has two or three opportunities to make money a year. And if you have somebody that's like, well, I'm kind of a little iffy on the rules and we haven't really read over it. You know, there was once last year, I think we talked about the new rules and we got together and that's about it. Now I do these events and then I go work at my casino that I own, you know, off the other days. It doesn't make any sense that there's not something on the level that people can say, well, when was the last time this guy did training? I don't know when any judge last time did a class.
How many, obviously I don't work for Gannett anymore, but how many training seminars did we have to do over the course of a year that was like, you got to take your HR one, you got to take your sexual harassment one, you got to take this one, you got to take that one over and over.
And I have certificates to prove it.
That's right. You know what I mean?
Show me your certificates.
I mean, what's wrong with just review? Hey, once a quarter, once every 6 months, once a year at worst, you know, like a review test of like, what is the criteria? Yep. What are we looking at?
I think it would go a long way if commissions could say, this is the last time our judges did this or whatever, just to be on the level. I mean, like every organization does that, you know, it just seems like that would be part of the yearly performance review or
That's
something,
it.
You know?
And if people say, well, I don't get paid enough to do that. Then get out. Because somebody else will.
Yes.
Somebody else absolutely will. If it's too much of your time to take a 30-minute training class or a test or something to make sure that you know that you're in charge of this stuff that is highly important, as you said, to these people's career, and that 30 minutes, you ain't got that much time, then get out.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So that's where I want to see it moved. That's where I want to see everybody's focus is on better regulation, better administration, better evaluation, better education. I think if we do that, we don't need to worry about changing the whole system, blowing it up and starting over.
Just take it from behind the back door. I mean, everything seems like behind the paywall or behind a curtain. We don't get to see it. We don't understand the process. I think people just want to feel that it's all on the level and have a clear understanding that people are going in there with a proper sense of education, that they're knowing that they're at the top of their level. You know, just show us that they're at the top of the level.
That's it.
Don't just have us expect that, okay, well, he's at the event, so obviously they have to be the right choice. I mean, we've seen the process of how these people get picked, and it just seems random. Mm-hmm. It just seems like there's no real sort of process behind it. It would just be nice if it was a clear understanding of why this person was picked to work this event.
To a lot. Tell you what, it's funny you brought up the gambling aspect of things. Obviously, that's still very much a big story that's not going to go away anytime soon. But so I don't talk about it much on here out of respect for my longtime friend. But I do another podcast as well, Cage Side with John Morgan.
Yeah, it's fucking confusing.
Started a few months ago.
So by the way, we're going to name this one now just the MMA Roadshow. I don't want it to be confused with that other with John Morgan podcast.
He wants to take John Morgan out of it, even though John Morgan's in both of them. But it's for Grind City Media, which is a media company that's owned by the Memphis Grizzlies. Well, recently I had to take a training seminar for the gaming policy for the NBA. Everybody in the organization had to, and it was eye-opening, man. And I don't know that the UFC or that, you know, these other major organizations, I think there'll be a real legal discussion of how much they can do because they're contractors, right? They're not employees. But, I mean, this gaming policy for the NBA that everybody has to take is pretty incredible. And I won't read the whole thing for you. It's a 4-page document. We had to take a training seminar like we talked about and pass a test at the end of it and all that. But it just starts out and says, integrity is one of the NBA's core values. It defines who we are, what we do, and how we are perceived. Everyone associated with the NBA, governors, team investors, team and league employees, players, and referees, is expected to conduct themselves in accordance with the highest standards of honesty, fairness, and ethical dealings, understandably so. So the NBA policy is essentially you do not bet on anything in the NBA or any of its associated leagues. That means WNBA, G League, NBA 2K League, which I thought was crazy. So that's the video game league, the Basketball Africa League, and any other league associated with the NBA. So anything that has to do with basketball, betting on who will be the first pick in a draft, betting on, you know, anything that's related to basketball, you do not bet on. And so that applies to me now. Not that I'm a gambler by any stretch, but because I do a podcast on their media network, cannot bet on anything NBA related. You also can't do any illegal gambling, which means so you just can't bet on basketball. Now, if you want to come to Vegas and like play some blackjack or play some poker, all good. You want to bet on football? All good. You just can't bet on anything basketball. Now, no illegal gambling. So like the offshores and the unregulated books, you can't do anything with them. So now if you want to bet football with them on an offshore, can't do that. You want to play their casino games on the offshore? Can't do that. But if you're in a legal casino, a regulated casino,
so that's some of the hardcore shit. Like, who goes to some offshore illegal stuff?
I know,
like,
right? I know.
I mean, I guess I get it if you live in a place that's not cool like Las Vegas. I mean,
we're kind of spoiled. And then there's actually extra rules for referees. Referees can't bet on anything.
That makes sense.
Like, they basically are limited. They can't do any sports betting whatsoever. And I do think that makes sense. And then there's no fixing of games, obviously. No.
They had to say it.
I know, right? Like, come on, you should know. There's no tipping.
Guys, we're just gonna be sure. You can't fix a game, all right?
Just say it. It's in paper. That's the one. Like, you know, coffee is hot or whatever. Like, yeah, okay, got it. No tipping, of course, which is disclosing confidential information. No playing in basketball fantasy games. And they even said in the training video, they were like, "What if it's a free one? Like, what if there's not even any money involved?" And they were like, nope, can't even play in the basketball fantasy league. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. Here's the part: the penalties, the disciplinary action should you be found to be in a violation of this include fines, suspensions, termination of employment, and disqualification from any further association with an NBA league or its team. So basically, you can get banned from the sport. I'm going to be interested to see where it goes because I got to think that somehow the UFC is going to come up with something similar to this. Except that this applies to employees, and now you're talking about contract labor. So I don't know how far they can go with it. So I'm kind of interested to see what the policy is. But it was pretty eye-opening to see this. So it's pretty wild because you know what's been really interesting about this whole gambling story is that when it first came out that the UFC was like, fighters can't gamble. Like, we've always said it, but we got to make sure it's official now. Fighters can't gamble. There were a lot of people that were like, bro, don't you understand that fighters make a lot of money this way? It was like, you know, people were kind of defending the right that they had to do it. And then the crowd stuff broke. But now that I was forced to read through a policy from another major organization. Like, dude, think about like when we wrote stories about Justin James betting on himself with his entire purse. And, you know what I mean? We kind of glorified it. We were like, wow, can you believe it? You know, some people said it was dumb, but whatever. It's like, you know, that was a year ago, and we're like, of course we know fighters gamble. Of course we know they bet on everything. And now you see what the policy is for other leagues. It's like, whoa, this is going to change dramatically.
I mean, it's still weird to see they'll put odds up still, like, on the fights, you know, like, who the underdog is. And, like, here you're telling that your fighters can't do whatever and you don't want to be part of your sport, but it's still part of your broadcast.
Yeah.
Your talent's talking about who's the heavy underdog, who's a blah, blah, blah.
Oh, they're not at giving away point, that. They're not giving away that DraftKings money. They're changing the policy. They ain't giving away that DraftKings money.
And it's just really weird, you know. I mean, it sounds very, very, you know, be one thing or the other, you know. Like, if you're going to try to be this beacon of, okay, we're not going to allow people to do it, we're trying to be on the right side of things, don't put it on your broadcast. Because how is your broadcast not sort of influencing it? Because then if you got a guy coming in, and you got the announcers talking about how this guy's coming in on a lost streak, but you can't believe he's a heavy underdog. You know, people are blah, blah, blah. I'm like, bro, you're altering it right there. You're contributing it to swing it one way or another right there on your broadcast, but yet you don't want people to gamble. It's like, just do one or the other, you know.
That's interesting.
You want the sport to be good.
That's the way the NFL used to be, right? Where the NFL would not, like, they would never allow any discussion of gambling.
Right.
Points, lines, spreads, they would never. Now they're starting to open up a little bit more.
Well, plus, too, they did, because they thought that was, I think, partially because they always wanted to get into Vegas.
Right.
And then, like, everybody was like, well, we're not quite sure if you can keep the two separate. And then once it opened up, I think they were just like, well, everything's cool.
Right.
You know, we're in Vegas, and the ceiling hasn't burned down yet. You know, we're still able to do it. It's just weird that, you know, it just seems weird to me, you know, that – for one, you're going to come out and try to, you know, say, our people are not going to do this, this, this. But yet you watch any show and it's thrown up there 10 times during a broadcast about the odds and who's the underdog.
And what parlay hit. And had you bet this, you would have won that.
Some guy is throwing $1 million. I'm like, bro, you're doing it right there. That's the same thing that you just trying to say a coach is off to the side saying right here. You're giving the story about how a guy's just recovering from an injury and he's back fighting, but he's the underdog, but you think that he's got a great chance to come in here. I'm like, how's that not, you know, doing the same thing?
What do you think about
a wider scale?
What do you think about media being able to gamble? Because it's funny, because I've always said I never do it because I feel weird about it. I did go and open an account at Circa just because I was hanging out down there. I put money in it. I still haven't made a bet on it because I still feel weird about it.
Yeah.
But now, especially, like, as I've seen this policy, like, I mean, we have access to a lot of information and access to a lot of people. Do you think, I mean, there's, and I don't think necessarily the argument of, like, do you find it ethical or not? Like, I guess that's everybody's own particular moral compass. But if now that we know how these other leagues handle it and how they consider, like, insider information and essentially non-public information to be an issue, do you think media should be allowed to
bet? I would think maybe if it's like you said, the non-public thing. I mean, if you're talking about what a fighter says at media day or anything, that's all out there in the public. That's just doing stuff like that. But if you're embedded in with a fight camp and maybe you're seeing something that some other people don't, and you're like the coach is like, don't show this, don't do whatever, don't this, you know, he's been fighting off this thing. Maybe that is the point where you're like, okay, this person had inside information. Maybe that's the line.
But that's interesting, right?
But if it's everything that's on the level, then that's all in public information that anybody can, you know.
That's a good point. Like, if it happens in the media, if it's on camera, if it's out there, like, now, granted, that doesn't mean that people took the time to watch it, but it was there.
Yeah.
It was public information. But if somebody pulls you aside and you're like, hey, Coach X, like, you know, how's so-and-so looking?
Yeah.
Man, we barely got through this camp, man. Like, we're in bad shape.
If you're the kind of person that's always, like, hanging out with a camp or hanging out with a team and you're closer tied with them and, like, you're buddy buddies and you're not obviously a unbiased media person and you're having inside sort of information, that's the kind of thing that I would not be opposed to that be the sort of thing where they think that, no, poo-poo on that, you know, because you do have some stuff. But if it's
stuff
that's
like,
out in the public, anybody has access to that.
Like, pro practices aren't open to the public, so to speak.
Right.
But a lot of journalists, you know, have an invitation because they have a good relationship with the team that the coach is like, if you want to come watch practice, you can.
But that's the thing. But that's open. But if you find something that – if you're ever like, don't show this, don't film this, don't this because of this, 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 that's when it becomes something else. If you're just, I think, at a private – even if the practice is – typically closed, but you have permission to be there.
Right.
If you see everything on the level, like it's a practice and everything looks fine, I don't think that's anything that anybody else couldn't have got. But if somebody was like, you see somebody and they're like, ah, and they tweak their back, and the coach is
like, that's what I'm wondering.
And the coach is like, hey, can you not say anything about it?
Right.
Don't go bet on some shit, because that's the kind of thing that I think that be that's considered. I can see where that is the same sort of insider information that people can get in trouble with.
Mm-hmm.
If that, I guess, makes it easier for them to say, okay, no media can do it. I mean, but for the most part, most of us don't have access or don't or choose to not go and put ourselves in that situation. If I only see the stuff I see at media day or the stuff that's just open to the public, and I'm putting the same interview, I mean, don't stop me, because I'm not getting inside information. But, you know, I mean, not that I gamble much, but I, for fun, I'll throw random-ass parlays.
Yeah,
I'll put, like, 7 or 8 fight parlays just for fun.
Yeah, to be honest, like, I don't have an issue. Like, when people be like, hey, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, the $5 down on a 5-fight parlay or something like that. Like, that's
to me.
Is
I always do, like, 18 parlays.
That, to me, is, like, almost like playing a lottery ticket almost.
It's a lottery.
You know what I mean? But if you're, like – yeah, like if you're a media member and you're like, yeah, I'm, you know, I'm gambling $2,000 or $3,000 a week or something, like that's
good for you that you have $2,000 or $3,000. I think I put one.
Yeah, you're definitely not a. First of all, let me say, there is no media member gambling $2,000 to $3,000 a week.
Because I think, what did I do the other day? I put like $20 in random parlays, $25 in, like, it was like 15. 10 or 15 random parlays, but most of them were like 5 to 8 parlays.
Yeah.
I had one that hit five team parlay, but it was like all favorite, so it got me like $27. Yeah, so it's like, you know, I wasn't breaking the bank. It was like my $2 or $3 parlay.
I'm sorry, buddy, but I know we're friends, but I'm gonna have to call the gaming commission now. I think you
he made $27. I think I squared even with all the other ones or something.
Do you know the type of money that's being siphoned out of these casinos by guys like this?
But I mean, it is definitely. I mean, it's worthy of discussion. I mean, just because, I mean, there is a possibility. I think if somebody was spending a lot of time with fighters behind doors and had the possibility of seeing a lot of stuff, a lot of training stuff, and that person also happens to be winning a lot of gambling, maybe it is something to address it. But I think it's probably few and far between where you're actually having a lot of journalists that are spending time with a particular camp. And then at that point, you have to question, are they really a journalist, or is it somebody that's like more like just a team
PR rep. You
know,
it's true.
I mean, it's, you know, because at some point it does differentiate itself, you know, when all your stuff is just behind the scenes photos of them training and stuff, and then it's all going to their personal accounts, and you're not really, you know, an external media, you're more of their PR team. But I mean, it's definitely worth discussing. But you know, who pays attention to media? I mean, we'll have the random, I see random people every once in a while will follow and say, like, I'll see that the person on their Twitter profile shows that they're a betting thing. I don't really know a lot of betting people that are following journalists for their tips. You know, I mean, maybe there are some that do it.
Some to just get, like, information, you know what I mean? But
yeah,
but not for the picks.
Yeah.
But, yeah, more for, like, you know, news, interviews, you know, stuff
because
like
they want to know what's going on.
They
want to get the information in the fight camp and a lot of other stuff or stuff on the level. But we're not really certainly swinging the money, you know, around.
Right.
But, I mean, if they did follow me, they would be following the first two-time MMA Junkie Staff Picks.
It's official.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it was basically clinched before you even went in last.
Yeah, but still, even that last one, I was going in with a 7 lead, and then there were only 6 fights, so it was already done. But I ended up winning with a 6 pick lead.
Wow.
Which I have to think has to be one of the bigger leads.
I think so. Yeah, we've usually had some pretty close
ones. Man, I was going in there at one point with like 9. I was like, bro, if I could just swing with that, I'd just be like, look at this dick coming in the room. Clear the way. I'm swinging it. Get out the way. But still, 6 is pretty good. But yeah, so it'll be interesting next year when they start doing the picks to see the 2 years listed in there.
First two-time winner.
First two-time one.
And that means 3-time winners between the MMA Roadshow.
I'm telling you.
Listen to here for your picks, baby. Or don't.
Or don't.
Or just have fun talking MMA with some dudes with a cold beer. All right, listen, holidays coming up, as we said, no card this week. So enjoy your holidays. I got some Christmas Eve plans. My wife, born and raised in Mexico, so for her, Christmas Eve is more of the bigger day than Christmas. And so I've got some surprise plans made. They don't know what it is yet. I'm going to surprise them with a pretty cool night that I'll be happy to talk about afterwards. I'm actually excited. It's kind of it's a present for all of us, to be honest with you. Like, it's an experience that I'm pretty stoked about as well. So,
but only people that are on Patreon will find out.
No, that's right. I'll tell about it after. Patreon.com/MMA Roadshow if you want to find out about the special plans.
All of a sudden, I'll see you. Danielle is just going to subscribe.
Who is this D. Morgan in here?
D. Morg.
Too funny. But, yeah, so enjoy your Christmas Eve. Enjoy your Christmas or whatever you celebrate. Just enjoy your holidays. And then, of course, like I said, we'll be back next week for the regular episode, and then I will make the trip out to Philadelphia for Fury Professional Grappling 6. Those are always a lot of fun. And like I said, we got
Burt Watson out there.
Maybe so. Got a lot of UFC talent on it, so it'll be a lot of fun. And I'm going to fly back on New Year's, watch the show via tape delay, and maybe have Frosty Beverage 2 heading into 2023.
Maybe.
Okay, I'm going to have a lot of
like it was a question, like, well, maybe, you know, I'm going to, you know, this is the year I'm going to start my resolutions early. Mm. I'm not going to drink as much.
But on the 31st!
It's on.
Everybody have a good time. We'll rejoin you next week, and we'll finish up the year strong. In the meantime, thanks for listening. We'll be right back.